Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. We invite you to visit our website, towardthelight.org, and also towardthelight.info. We've got a myriad of support and services available to you, and also would like to encourage you to make a donation to support this show and the organization with all the special people we've got on Toward the Light. This week, I am very pleased to welcome back Mr. David Icke. Hello, David.
Hello, Julia.
It's wonderful to have you, and in spite of you not feeling well, I'm certainly hoping that you're feeling a lot better now. You've got a wonderful new book out. I'm not sure when it's actually going to hit the stands or the stores, as it were, but the David Icke Guide to Global Conspiracy and How to End It. That sounds like a very good idea to me. So why don't we start that by letting you tell us a little bit about the book, and let's just have a lovely dialogue here.
Okay. Well, the book is coming off the presses now, so it's available through my website now, davidicke.com, and will be in general circulation in the next few weeks. But I began to see that enormous numbers of people were beginning to get to the point where they felt uneasy about the world. They didn't like the way the world was going, and they didn't like what was happening in the world, but they couldn't just put their finger on exactly why they were uneasy or what it was that was making them feel not good about the way the world was going. And so I put together this book. It's 28 chapters. I call the chapters dots, not chapters, because you can look at things in isolation and they can be interesting, they can be fascinating, but to see the world in the way that it really is, you have to connect the dots. When you connect the dots, you can see the picture, and what appears on the surface to be unconnected people, unconnected events, unconnected all these different facets of life, institutions, for instance, and companies or what have you, they are actually connected. And when you connect the dots, the world ceases to be this mass of confusion and why do they do it like this? Why is this like that? Why is this done like this? And you start to see when you realize two things. A, we're a group of interbreeding bloodlines going back to the ancient world, want to take the world and humanity, and the methods they're using to get us there. When you have those coordinates, then what you see in daily life and on the daily news takes on a much clearer perspective. You start to see through the maze, through the haze, and through all the diversions that are put before us to get us to look the other way and not at actually what's happening. And fundamental to understanding the world and how it's structured is to look at the nature of reality itself, because the few have been able to control the many by keeping from the many the fundamental basic understandings and coordinates necessary to have a grasp on the world and what it is and where we are and who we are. If you don't realize that we create our own reality from our perspective of, and perception of reality, so for instance, if you consider yourself to be a powerless person, you will have a powerless life, not because you are, but because you believe you are, and that manifests in the experience you create. And so the first two chapters of the book are about the nature of reality and how we create it. And then I look at the way the world is structured today, which people daily experience. And from that perspective, why things are done as they are becomes perfectly, blatantly obvious once you realize what reality is and how we are creating it in a second-by-second way.
And we've also been very much hypnotized into creating and perpetuating a very limited reality, one that basically keeps us down and enslaved. Wouldn't you say that that is true?
Absolutely. The thing is that we create our own reality by the perception we have of reality. Now, that's happening anyway. The difference is whether we do that consciously by understanding that process, we are all the time sending out magnetic vibrational waves based on our state of being. And we are therefore drawing to us, through a system that I call vibrational magnetism, energy fields that sync with what we're putting out. And those energy fields in our daily lives we call people, places, ways of life, experiences. So the reason that if you look at people, look at their lives, they keep drawing to themselves the same kinds of people, the same kinds of experiences where, we go, oh, my goodness me, not again, is because that great line, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. And that happens because what you put out, you get back. And if you keep putting out the same thing, you're going to keep getting back the same thing. Now, this is going on anyway, like I say. However, we can either consciously understand that and then start to use that to create a life experience much closer to what we would like, or we can allow our sense of reality to be externally implanted into us through 24/7 mainstream media, through what we call bravely education, through governments implanting beliefs in reality, like, for instance, you can start a whole war by implanting the false reality that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. The whole game of global manipulation, the global conspiracy, is based on manipulating humanity's sense of reality and sense of itself. For instance, if you can get people to have a sense of reality that they are in danger from terrorists, they are in danger from this, they're in danger from global warming, they're in danger, you're in danger, you're in danger, then people will give their power away to the few to protect them from what they've been manipulated to believe as their reality that they are in danger from. So the whole thing's a mind game. And it's about taking control back of our own mind, our own perception, our own reality, and not any longer giving that away and letting others externally implant it into us. Because either way, like I say, we create our own reality collectively and individually. But the question is, where is the point of that reality coming from? Is it coming from us, or is it coming from implanted belief, which is going on all the time from cradle to grave?
That's what I thought too, and I've been noticing so much lately for the past number of years, and not the least of which was really cultivated, as it were, or perpetuated by the 9/11. You know, this whole, let's implant some fear, let's get everybody frightened because it paralyzes us and it keeps us very disabled. I'm just seeing this paranoia out of control. And people say, oh, well, if we're not super paranoid like this, you know, we won't be safe. And how can we let people know that all of this stuff is really a lie, and it is coming from a source that is not certainly from love, because love does not perpetuate this kind of thinking. So I wondered about your take with that, David, because it's just been really epidemic proportions of this fear that we're dealing with right now.
Well, it's like I was saying earlier, once you get certain coordinates of where this network wants to take the world and the methods they use to take us there, then 9/11 is a wonderful example of how something that looks one way without those coordinates can be seen in a very different way once you have them. Because people say, when people like me say that 9/11 was not orchestrated from a cave in Afghanistan by a guy with a beard, it was actually orchestrated within the borders of the United States, involving not in total, far from it, but elements within the American military, within the FBI, within the CIA and the National Security Agency and that whole so-called security community, and in league with other agencies around the world, or elements within them. Not everyone who works for the CIA or anything like it is trying to manipulate the world to an Orwellian global state. It's those that control these organizations we need to look at, not the rank and file people who whose families would be subject to the very same Orwellian state that everyone else would be. But when you realize that getting people in fear, and this technique of manipulation that I dubbed problem reaction solution, where you create the problem, you tell the people through an unquestioning mainstream media what you want them to believe about that problem, and you're looking for the reaction from the people to say something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it? You can then, you who have covertly created the problem, got the reaction, do something, then offer the solutions to the problems you have created. And 9/11 is the most blatant example of that you can think of. If you look at the way the world has changed in terms of more surveillance, more control, more destruction of privacy, freedom of speech, freedom of movement, all these things have been devastated since 9/11. Why? Because of 9/11. We have to be protected, we're told, from the people who orchestrated that horrific day. But when you get the coordinates, you realize that those who are saying we must take freedoms away to protect people, that they are the very same group, or the people, the group behind them, are the very same group that orchestrated the problem of 9/11 in the first place.
Yes.
This is why there are so many unanswered questions about the official story of 9/11 and why one strand of it doesn't connect with any other strand. If what they say here about what happened on 9/11 and who was responsible, then what they say here can't be true, because you can't put the two together. One is contradictory to the other, and then that's contradictory to what you said here, and that's contradictory to what you said there. The reason this can be found when you investigate the official story of 9/11 is because it's a pack of lies, and pack of lies don't tend to make coordinated sense when you put all the different statements about them together. And so we need to start questioning everything that we're told, and asking a very simple antidote question to problem reaction solution, and that is, who benefits? Who benefits from me believing what I'm being told about this event? Who benefits from me being told and me believing what's being said about this person or this group or whatever? And invariably, when you see things like 9/11 and the London bombings and all these things, the answer to that question will be anyone that wants to justify more centralization of power and more destruction of freedom. And this is the reason why we have a society where we are constantly diverted from looking at the big questions, like the nature of reality, who are we, where are we, and what's really going on in the world, by television soaps, television game shows, and all these other diversions, the cult of celebrity and all the rest of it. They're all diversions. I mean, I left sport, and, you know, I was a professional footballer, and, you know, my family loves sport, but it's an entertainment. And if you keep it at that point, then it's a nice add-on to life. But once you get to the point where it is your life, it is your whole perspective of life, then you're getting diverted away from being able to look at the big questions and the big picture and start to see what's really happening around you. So all these diversions are there to keep our heads down, including keeping people desperately trying to survive week after week, month after month financially, so that their whole focus is meeting that month's mortgage payment, meeting that month's payment at the supermarket or whatever. And so people say to you, well, look, mate, what you're saying is very interesting, but I live in the real world. I've got to pay the mortgage at the end of the month. That is exactly the diversion that they want to put us in. And we need to lift our heads, look up, and see what's really happening around us, and not let this these diversions take our attention away from what we need to know and what we need to do if we're not going to live in this Orwellian global state within 10 years, because it's happening by the day now.
Oh, Prime, I'm seeing that so much. And in fact, when 9/11 happened and somebody rang me up to tell me what was going on, because I don't watch television, straight away I said, the government has done this to give themselves an excuse to put everybody under complete and constant surveillance. I just knew it. I knew it straight away. And it was dear soul like you that really helped put all that together and validate and verify my own conclusions about that, because I knew that it wasn't just a bunch of crazy blokes on planes. In fact, it wasn't even the planes they said that it was, you know, so... they've been lying like crazy, and it is, I think, to... in fact, I thought this over 30 years ago, that they want to put us in a global fascist police state, and it's been really upsetting me a lot.
And it's happening, of course, it's happening by the day. And we're in a point now, I've been talking about this for years now, that when you've got secret manipulation to bring about certain changes in the world... There is always a window where those changes start to become manifest. In other words, what has remained hidden becomes there to be seen. And that is a crucial time because we're in it. It's the time when people are no longer looking at what people are saying is coming sometime over the rainbow, sometime never. And they're actually seeing it happening. And I've seen the interest in my work, in my books, absolutely soar in the years since 9/11, because people are now seeing and experiencing this change. It's not some esoteric future prediction. Mm-hmm. It's now part of everyday life, and so this is a time when we have a real chance of getting people to actually look at what's going on. But we need to not just talk about it, but start to connect and do things that are necessary to stop it, because you have literally a handful of people at the core of this compared with the global population, let's say 6 billion. Yeah. If vast numbers of those people cease to cooperate with those that are imposing this whole centralized global state, then it cannot happen. The reason that the few can control the many and introduce this global prison state is because the few manipulate these changes to be passed into law, and then the population think that it's because it's the law, therefore we have to obey it. Well, if we're going to accept that, then we're saying that when a few people make decisions that we have no input into whatsoever, then suddenly we have got to obey everything they've decided. Well, you might as well just, you know, hand out the handcuffs now, because it's all over. For me, what law needs to do is respect the people and serve the people, not impose the will of the few upon the people. And I'm a great believer in the sort of Gandhian philosophy of peaceful, underline that several times, peaceful non-cooperation. Because if someone comes out of the White House or Downing Street and says, we've had a meeting and we've decided this is what we're going to do, and the people say in large enough numbers, we're not doing that. Well, they have no power. Their power is in us giving our power away to the few who say this is going to happen and we've decided it. Well, you may have decided it, mate, but we ain't doing it. And years and years ago, during the days of Margaret Thatcher in Britain, she introduced something called the poll tax. Now, this was a grotesquely unfair tax in which, in effect, people with a lot of money and people with not much money were paying the same amount of money, which is ridiculous. And so because this affected not just one group of people, this is a very important point, not just one group of people, but people throughout society, people that you might call the middle class as well as the working class, etc., there was a mass united protest at this, in which enormous numbers of people, including myself for a long time, refused to pay it in protest at its injustice. And as a result, the almighty Margaret Thatcher, as she thought she was, had to change the tax. And in effect, that was the real big blow that brought her down in the end. Now, the reason it worked, and the protest was successful in bringing about the end of that injustice, was because people from different elements of society, with different backgrounds, etc., etc., operated with unity together. The way that the few control the many is the age-old principle of divide and rule.
Yes.
So what they do is when they target one group, then the other groups say, well, that's not my problem, it's that group's problem, and they just look the other way. And they pick off group after group after group, and there's nothing sums to what I'm saying more powerfully than what was said by a pastor in Germany at the time of the Nazis, just after the time of the Nazis, when he said, first they came for the Jews, and I was not a Jew, so I did nothing. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I was not a trade unionist, so I did nothing. Then they came for the communists, and I was not a communist, so I did nothing. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me. And this is the way that it works, because what happened in Nazi Germany is a mirror of what is happening on a global scale today.
Yes.
And, of course, it was Hitler and the Nazis that justified imposing their dictatorship in part through the burning down of the German parliament, which was blamed on the enemies that the Nazis wanted to target, when in fact the Nazis themselves burned that down. That's just the same principle as 9/11. It's been going on for a long time. And if these techniques of manipulation work, why would they change them?
Right, exactly. And sadly, I remember that because that's when I was born in 1942, and I feel the blanket of terror just really paralyzing me with fear, and I've been so acutely aware of that energy ever since. And every day now, so this is no different, and even going to be worse than Nazi Germany. And trying to talk about this to people, you know, sadly, and I don't want to be rude to Americans, but bless their dear souls, they think they live in a free country. In fact, I heard a fellow Brit who became an American say in an interview that he said, oh, this is a free country, there's free speech in America. And I thought, no, there's not, because people have been arrested just in the past few weeks just for speaking up, just for speaking up. And they've been using these taser guns on them and all that. There's no free speech here in America.
The thing is about the people you're talking about, Juliet, and I've found this so often, is we have freedom. Yes, we have freedom to agree. And if you are in your daily life not challenging anything that these manipulators are doing, then you will appear to have free speech because you'll be left alone. Of course you'll be left alone, because you're not a problem to those in trying to impose this global state of control. It's when you in some way challenge that, speak out against it, that's when you realize that there's not freedom. You see, the thing is that they don't want to give people the impression that they're not free, because that gives people a perspective that there is a problem here that needs sorting out. What you need to do is to keep as many people as possible in the ignorant belief that they have freedom, because people who think they're free will never do anything about the fact that they're not. So if you toe the line and you live your life in accordance with the way that this group wants people to live, then you will appear to have freedom because people will leave you alone. As soon as you start challenging this stuff, that's when you realize that your freedom is nothing like what you thought it was. And again, you know, people are, as you quite rightly point out, finding this out not just in America, though it's becoming very blatant there, but all over the place. I mean, we had a lady here who was jailed, or arrested and charged and convicted of an offense under anti-terrorism legislation in effect.
Yes.
For simply standing at the cenotaph, which is the memorial for people who died in the wars, and reading the names of the dead soldiers in Iraq. And so when you get to that level of blatant destruction of freedom, well, you know, but see, most people wouldn't do that. Most people are sitting at home watching the soaps and watching the sports and all the rest of it, and they think they're free because no one's going to arrest them for doing that. But it's when you start doing anything that exposes or challenges it that you start to get the hassle and all the rest of it. But it's funny, you know, the louder you shout, the more known you become for doing this, the less likely these people are to target you. Well, that's not true. Not target you, but openly target you by saying we must shut this guy up, and they do it in a very blatant way, because that again alerts people to hold on a second. Why are they targeting this person? It's obviously what he's saying is true. Otherwise, they wouldn't do this. They target you in other more subtle ways, which are not, if you like, head on, and are done to undermine you in ways that try to stop you doing what you're doing without actually going, you know, very publicly to stop you, because that just proves the fact that what you're saying is true.
Mm. So they do this covertly. They seek to undermine people covertly, and I've certainly seen that a lot myself. And yet one thing that makes me very, very pleased and grateful through all of this is that this year I have seen and experienced a lot more dialogue about all of this stuff. People just coming out and talking about the reptilians and acknowledging that they exist now. So that is a quantum leap forward, but we still have got a long way to go.
That is a very good point, because when I started talking about all this nearly 20 years ago, I mean, those that most of the people, not all of them, but most of the people that listened to what I had to say just thought I was a complete nutter who was having a midlife crisis. And most people just didn't want to know about this stuff. But now, particularly since 9/11, that affected people. I've noticed on a subconscious level where they won't even realize they've been affected by it. But that not only had the effect of increasing fear among people, and therefore accepting things happening in the world to protect them and all the rest of it, so they think. On a subconscious level, it also affected a large number of people who, if you like, symbolically got off the fence a bit and started saying, well, hold on, I don't feel good about what's happening in the world. There's something not right. They can't articulate it necessarily, but there's something not right, and which brings us back to the book. That's why I put it together in the way I have, so that you know, the, all these people now, and they're gathering in numbers all the time, you're quite right, the USA, and they're starting to look at it, the world differently. Well, the book is there to say, hey, this is why you'll feel uneasy about the world, and this is how what's going on around you. We are dealing now with increasingly vast numbers of people who, of course, are not reported by the mainstream media, so therefore, to most people, it doesn't seem like what I'm saying is happening, but it is. Enormous numbers of people are now opening their eyes and opening their minds to things they never would before. And I found this. When I started on this journey of uncovering this, you start out with the basic things like all the different oil and pharmaceutical cartels and how everything's connected and controlled by the same people, while there's different names of the companies. The companies are all controlled by the same people. Same with the mainstream media and all that stuff, which is controlled by the corporations. And in places like America and around the world, it's owned by corporations. And that once you realize those corporations are actually controlled by the same people, you realize you're dealing overwhelmingly in the realms of media ownership and banking ownership and transnational corporation ownership, but actually corporation, not corporations. The plural bit is nearly different names on the door, not different people and different forces controlling the corporations. That invariably you find that they're the same. And you start at that level, but as you go on, unless you are restricted by preconceived belief, whether it's political preconceived belief or religious preconceived belief, which stops so many researchers who look at all the level that I'm talking about, you know, media ownership and all the rest of it, but they won't go into these deeper levels because if they do, their religious belief system's under threat, so they won't go there. But what you've got to do, I would suggest, and I found this from my experience, you've got to research so many different subjects before you can really get any kind of grasp on what's actually going on in the world and why society is structured as it is. And fundamental to that is understanding, like I've said earlier, the nature of reality and how we create it, and the fact that this world that we see with our eyes, or think we do, we actually decode it with our brain, is just one television station, if you like, three-dimensional holographic television station on the dial, and sharing the same space as this one are all the other television stations of reality and what have you. In the same way that I can got my television here and I can tune it to, say, BBC television. When I'm on BBC television, that's my reality. I'm on BBC television. I'm watching that. But all the other television stations exist in the same space. And if I press a button, retune my television to one of them, then suddenly that's my reality. I'm watching that one. But the one I've just switched from hasn't ceased to exist. Just because I switched from it, it still exists. It's just I'm just not tuned to it anymore. And we are multidimensional beings. And what happens is because of the way that we are implanted with belief and programmed with belief, and that belief is overwhelmingly based on limitation. I can't, you can't, it can't be done. We get super glued, if you like, to one point on the dial. So this physical world, this five-sense world, as we experience it through the five senses, becomes our only reality, not even the prime reality, but for the vast majority of people still, their only reality. And what, however, more and more as people start to wake up, is that their dial is becoming more fluid. And this is what psychics can do, and this is what sensitive people can do, and it's what everyone can do if we just desensitize ourselves from this five-sense obsession. The dial becomes more fluid, and you can start to access other dimensions of knowledge, other dimensions of wisdom, other dimensions of life. And so it's not just that this world is manipulated by a group of, if you like, human bloodlines. it also connects out, as my research has found, into other dimensions where entities, whatever you want to call them, that look very anything but human, are actually manipulating this reality through these interbreeding families that go back to the ancient world. And it's been, as you quite rightly point out, Juliet, it's been a very encouraging and quite obvious change that's going on. But people who, understandably from their original perspective, would find this stuff like, you're crazy, man, what are you talking about? They're now beginning to say, well, hold on a second, this is starting to make sense. So we are entering a different realm, and it's to a very large extent, because this awakening is taking place, because there is an energetic change taking place, which is acting like a spiritual alarm clock. It's breaking up this rigid thought, these eggshells of static energy and belief that I call them.
Yes.
It's for this reason that the manipulators are now working so hard to keep the lid on it, and it's one of the key reasons that we're seeing this massive advance in surveillance control and the real jewel in the crown of this whole manipulation, which is what they want to microchip everybody.
Okay.
They want to microchip every child from birth, because at the level of the physical body, which is a hologram, we operate electrically and chemically in terms of the way thought and emotions manifest. If you can manipulate the body's chemical or electrical balance and electrical systems, you are going to fundamentally affect the way people think and feel emotion. And I've done a number of chapters or dots in the book where I'm showing how why food additives have been introduced en masse through the corporations or the corporation. Why we are living in an incredibly and an ever denser electromagnetic soup, if you like, caused by all these different sources of electromagnetic and microwave technologies, not just around us, but also coming from the satellite networks, etc. It's affecting us electrically and chemically, and therefore it is acting like a computer virus on what is in effect a body computer. And if your computer is not operating correctly and efficiently, it doesn't matter how talented or how advanced your computer operator is at the keyboard, he's not or she's not going to be able to get through that computer the information that they want to process through it if it's not working properly. And if you take the computer operator to be consciousness, that consciousness which becomes embedded to experience this reality through the physical body, then it's the same principle. It doesn't matter what level of consciousness you have. If your body computer is not working properly, then it's going to be more difficult to manifest the true magnitude of your consciousness into this reality. You know, people talk about how people are, you know, mentally handicapped or mentally disabled by car accidents and stuff, and they talk about people being vegetables, etc. Well, they're not. They are infinite consciousness. What has happened is the vehicle through which that consciousness manifests itself has been damaged to the point where it cannot transfer the understanding and the advancement of the understanding of the consciousness into this reality through the physical body. I mean, you get someone who's had a massive car crash and has got brain injuries and stuff. Well, that's no different to picking up your computer and dropping it on the floor. It ain't going to work properly, no matter how good your programmer is. We are manipulated all the time to identify who we are with the physical body and not with what we really are, which is infinite consciousness, which people like you have experienced so tangibly in the out-of-body state. And so the microchip, getting round to what I'm where I'm going with this, is designed to be able to hijack the electrical and chemical system of the body, and therefore externally allow it to be manipulated through, in terms of the way it thinks or doesn't think, the way it feels emotion. Because, you know, it's widely accepted fact. It's so blatantly obvious. When we get access to certain chemicals, behavior changes. And people say, oh, children today, oh, you can't control them. And it's like, well, hold on a second. Have you seen what children today are eating and drinking? Have you read the ingredients? What's in it? It's a chemical cocktail. It's not food. That drink is a chemical cocktail. And if you're going to have children consuming that stuff on a vast scale through the formative years of their life onwards, when the body's still forming and the brain's still forming, then don't be surprised if those children act strangely. They're being chemically and electrically rewired. So this is what I do with the book. I explain how all these things connect. The microchip is absolutely the jewel in the crown of this, because it gives them access to these processes and the ability to manipulate them.
And basically, they're returning all of humanity into robots. I've been thinking about that a lot, David. It's been really, really upsetting me to think about the microchip and what they plan to do with it. Yeah, I think again, people really need to be aware of what's going on. But I'm very excited about what you've done, because having had a number of near-death experiences and even just spiritually transformative experiences. Goodness me, I don't have to die to have these wonderful experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Experiencing directly the oneness that we are all one. And then when I saw your book, Infinite Love is the Only Truth, I thought, blimey, you know, I've got to tell them I saw this, I experienced it firsthand. Because I could see, whilst I was on the other side, that this plane is a hologram. And I was told specifically, that is an illusion. It
exactly.
is not real.
Exactly.
And we use the same analogy with the radio, you know, moving to different frequencies. It's so wonderful, and so this is the one thing that I'm clinging to for hope right now, David, is that what you're doing, bless you, on all of us, and the air is coming out, and that does, it also shakes up religious dogmas and beliefs, because a lot of people are not going to experience on the other side what they've been told, with religion. So this is very interesting, and I think just come what may, we've got to keep speaking out.
Yeah, I think the key thing is belief, rigid belief. These manipulators don't care if you rigidly believe in Christianity or rigidly believe in Islam or rigidly believe in atheism or whatever, as long as you rigidly believe in something. Because as science has shown, real science, when you have rigid belief systems, the brain's cells fire off in certain sequences that are related to the rigid belief. And that is a sign or an expression of the process whereby the brain, the mind, the lower mind, reads and decodes reality based on its belief in what's real. And you'll see, for instance, if you put two people together who have real serious preconceived ideas about each other and what they are and etc., you put them together and let them talk, and you can stand there with your mouth open because neither of them are hearing the other one. And if you say to one of them, what has that other person just said and how have they said it? Now, they'll tell you. And you say, well, hold on a second. He never said that, and he certainly didn't say it like that. But that person heard it like that, because the preconceived belief about the person, which is like a software program in a computer, reads reality to fit the preconceived belief. And what this happens across the whole range of daily experience. So it's quite simply, if you understand this, and these manipulators do, because the knowledge of reality has been passed over through across the generations of the chosen few in the top levels of the secret society network, which they use to manipulate covertly this global state. If you know how this process of decoding reality or filtering it through your belief system works, then all you've got to do is get en masse people to believe certain things. Like I say, it doesn't have to be one thing. It just has to be a rigid belief in something that gives you a great sense of limitation. And you will then manifest in your life, and humanity will collectively, an experience that's based on limitation. And so the basic agenda is to disconnect consciousness, incarnate consciousness, from its infinite self, and get it to identify itself and reality with the physical body. So you look in the mirror, and what you see in the reflection, you think that is you. Or that is all of you, when it's just the vehicle that your consciousness has used to experience this reality. Now, you can detach incarnate consciousness from its infinite self and isolate it into the sense of reality with the physical body, where does the physical level of reality get its sense of reality from? From the information coming in through the eyes and the ears. Now, they control that through the mainstream media and education and all the rest of it. And so what the whole trick is isolating, first of all, incarnate consciousness from its infinite self, the kind of infinite self you experience in that out-of-body state,
yeah.
And then program the computer level of reality, the body computer level of reality, with a certain a sense of everything. And this is what it does. And you've got infinite consciousness isolated in this way, in a programmed body of belief, thinking it's Mrs. Jones, who has no power, and I'm little me, when actually Mrs. Jones is infinite consciousness. She's just forgotten because she's been manipulated to forget. And it's vital that we start to move our point of observation and our point of self-identity from I'm Chuck Jones, I'm a man and I'm 6 foot tall and you know, all that stuff, I've got red hair or whatever, to I am infinite consciousness, and what I am experiencing here is not what I am, it is what I am experiencing. And that moves your perspective of self from little me to infinite me, and your life is transformed because your sense of reality is transformed. And I would say, in terms of creating our own reality, we can influence reality in the way that I've talked about, but also there are people who come into this reality to have a certain experience or to make a contribution. And they come in with that program, if you like, which keeps pushing them in the direction of what they've come to experience or they've come to achieve or whatever. And so if you have come into experience, say, poverty, at least for a while, then it doesn't matter how much you have visualizations of Ferraris or whatever, they ain't going to come because it's not your life experience. And if we can start to see that that's what we are doing, we're having a life experience, but what we really are is infinite consciousness, then, and I found this anyway, you can start to come to terms with things that happen in your life, because this is not, 3 score years and 10, and that's it. This is just a one experience in infinite eternity. And, you know, if I had not had many of the challenges that I've had in my life, then I would not be in a mental and emotional state that I could do what I'm doing now. If I'd have had a really, really easy life, then you don't build the mental and emotional strength that allows you to keep going despite great challenges to stop you keep going. So if we can see life as a journey where the not so pleasant is just as important in terms of developing people, often far more important than the things that we enjoy. I remember years ago, I was with a psychic when I was just starting to open up to all this and understand what was happening to me, because amazing things were happening. And this psychic said, I'm being given this message to pass on to you. And it was all about this idea of, instead of looking at every experience as good or bad, just look at why it's necessary. And it was talking about the fact that true love does not give the receiver what it would like to receive, but it will always give that which is best for it. So ponder on anything you do not like and see why it was necessary. And when I look back at my life, and I think if a lot of people did the same, they would realize that some of the greatest challenges where they thought, this is my worst nightmare, is actually what has made them the people that they are and would not have been had they not had those experiences. So, you know, not everything that happens that is a challenge is necessarily a bad thing. It just seems it at the time.
I think you're so right about that, too, because it really serves as a wake-up call. And it does help us to go deeper into things, and certainly my life has been challenging, but the fact that it has been, it just causes me to look more deeply into things. Okay, and anytime there's adversity, I always ask, what is the message in this? What am I being told? Instead of feeling sorry for myself or something like that.
I'll tell you a quick story, Julia. You know, during the 1980s in Britain, they had we had the yuppie period during Margaret Thatcher.
I remember that well.
Yeah, all these people in the City of London and the stock markets and banking systems, and they were making an absolute fortune on the stock markets out of privatization of state industries and all the rest of it. They were really, a great number of them really couldn't care less about anybody except themselves, and because it was all about making money. Well, I bumped, because eventually there was a crash, as there always is, and I bumped into one of these people some years later. And what happened when the whole thing crashed is he lost everything. Instead of having, you know, the Ferrari and the big house and the, you know, endless expense account, he had nothing. And that experience did more for him as a person in terms of understanding the world and himself than ever the yuppie period when apparently he had endless success and was going on. Because having nothing after having the life that he did allowed him to see what a vacuous life he had when he had all the money you could think of spending. Again, you know, often it is life is trying to say to us all the time, hey, this is an illusion. It's not real. All the stuff you think is important, all these things you register as or identify as success is all nonsense. It's all vacuous nonsense. You know, we have this thing in life, Juliet, well, you must succeed. You must succeed. Well, succeed, what does that mean? What it means is you must succeed according to the symbols of success that society has decided is successful. Big car, big house, lots of money, and all the rest of it. But why do we have to succeed? It's not about succeeding. And like I say, you know, it's just a little experience in this reality. And at the same time we're experiencing this reality, other levels of us are experiencing other realities we're not even aware of in the conscious mind. You know, we take things to be so important and we get so overwhelmed by them in terms of their importance when so often it doesn't matter. And you know, in the out-of-body state, all the things that seem so important here and hold us in servitude to them, serving slavishly to succeed or to be seen as successful and all this stuff, they don't matter. You realize what nonsense they are, what trinkets they are, what irrelevances they are. And the idea to keep us in servitude and serving the system is to do as much as possible to keep us in five sense reality so that we forget what nonsense it all is.
Well, it's really important that we start to grasp the fact once again that we really are infinite consciousness, and thank goodness for being so deathly ill where I did flatline and was able to pop out of this body and say, wow, blimey, you know, there is infinite love out here. And
you're a wonderful example of just what I've been talking about, Juliet, because I can't think that from a physical perspective that a lot of the things you've experienced were very pleasant, but as a result of that, you were allowed to see what most people in embodiment never see, you know. And, you know, I've said so many times, life has this wonderful ability to brilliantly disguise our greatest gifts as our worst nightmare.
Yes, yes, and it's so wonderful. Wow, David, I can't believe we're already at the end of this transmission of Talk of Light. It has been so wonderful having you with us again, and I'm sure we can do it again, too.
Oh, we'll do it again. No problem. It's lovely.
Oh, it's wonderful having you, and I really resonate so deeply with what you've been sharing, and that's why it's been important to have you on to talk about Infinite Love is the Only Truth, and now your wonderful new book. I can't wait to see it myself. It is called The David Icke Guide to the Global Conspiracy and How to End It. All right, everyone, let's focus on ending this because it needn't be this way. The light and the love is going to overpower all this darkness, come what may. So once again, you're listening to Toward the Light, leading back to the source. Please remember, it is only with the heart, not the head, not the fear. It is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. Next week, we will have Dr. Pam Kircher, a fellow NDEer and physician, and we will be talking to you next week. Visit our website, towardthelight.org and towardthelight.info. Once again, thank you so much, David, for being with us, and lots of love and hugs to you. It's been wonderful.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, Juliet. And, maybe next time we speak, we can talk about the difference between heart intelligence and brain intelligence, because that's something I'm really focusing on.
Let's do, indeed. That's a biggie. All right, everyone, so we can look forward to that. Blessings and love to all. We will talk to you next week.